Hello, I'm Terry David Mulligan, and this is Tasting Room Radio for July, my friends. I have one new friend and several longtime friends on today's show. We're going to start with Valeria Tate and Ian Sutherland. We've been doing interviews with Ian Sutherland since we started in 2007. At that time, he was the founder and the winemaker and the everything at Poplar Grove. He eventually sold to Tony Holler and headed for other parts of the world. Val Tate was very busy in the Okanagan, planting vineyards, advising, consulting, winemaking. Her last stop was at Bench 1775, where she increased production like tenfold. They've decided that now they are going to make wines together for themselves. They're going to make a Cab Franc, I think next year, or maybe even later this year. But it's going to be Ian's version of Cab Franc, and it'll be Val's version of Cab Franc. This is great. It's great. Also, Val is consulting one of the largest wine holdings in the Okanagan, the Gill family, under the label name of Gold Hill. There's a winery you want to keep an eye on, Gold Hill, because Val Tate is going to make those wines the best she possibly can. So that's what we're going to talk about, those things and others. Val and Ian decided to call their label Two House. We are going to taste a Chardonnay unlike any other in the Okanagan. It's fantastic. Very Montrachet style. And then we're going to taste an incredible Tempranillo. Were I wearing socks, they would have rolled up and down. The second guest is Stephen French from Little Engine on the Naramata Bench. Not too far away from where that original Poplar Grove winery was, actually. He and his wife, Nicole, are exacting winemakers. They know exactly what they're doing. There's no fumbling around here. I got three tiny Piccolo bottles sent to me as tasters. And it intrigued me because they were very good. I was advised to drink them within a couple of days because they wouldn't hold. The small Piccolo bottles lead directly to one of the interesting things that Little Engine is doing. They're doing virtual tastings. And Stephen is on screen. He'll guide you through the tasting. You can stop and taste and then make notes and hit play. It's a great idea. And it's just one of many. The more you know about how Little Engine wines are made, the greater the experience when you actually taste them. And then I wanted to know more about Little Engine and what they were up to this year, 2021. So, really, it's a primer for me. I need to know more about Little Engine because the more information I take in, the more information you can write down or take in as well. I hope it leads to good things for you. By the way, I will give you a heads up. We did the Ian and Val interview Canada Day, just as flags were being lowered to half-mast and people were attending reconciliation gatherings across this country. It was not a normal Canada Day. We're going to touch on that just because it was all we were talking about at the moment, and then we'll get on with the wine. This is Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Moon Cursor. They are delighted to announce that their tasting room on Osoyoos East Bench is officially open for daily tastings and sales. They have a COVID-19 safety plan in place to keep the staff and guests safe. They're offering guided wine tastings, private winemaking tour and tasting, and a lot of fun. There's complimentary shipping for orders of 12 bottles or more. And we welcome back Moon Cursor. All the details at the website, mooncursor.com. Ian Sutherland, Val Tate, before I ask you these questions, this day is having an effect on me. This is Canada Day, and my flag's at half-mast. It's a pretty dark, heavy day. I'm kind of wondering what your thoughts are about the situation with the residential schools and what happened from that point with Indigenous nations in this country and what we're celebrating today. Ian?
Well, we're looking at, I'm sure, upwards of 1,000 missing children's graves. We're looking at cultural genocide, and we're looking at all these historical colonial travesties and criminal acts. It's very, very hard to feel, joyful about Canada today. And I think that's what makes Canada one of the truly great nations, is that we're able to look at this horrific acts and say, yeah, that is part of our past, and that is clearly something that we need to take responsibility for and make amends for, and work actively today and in the near future and the long-range future to put these historical crimes in their perspective and also to try and make them right.
Val, you were saying some 70% of the Okanagan Valley was indigenous land, or is all indigenous land?
No, it's not that much, but it's like probably, I would say, fairly, you know, probably people will argue me on this, but I think 70% of the best vineyard sites for red fruit belongs to native-owned land. And, some of that is actually being used and produced by native-owned wineries. And so I feel like they're, especially the second generation that has embraced the industry and they're developing skill sets so it allows them to become, you know, develop careers in the industry, are being able to, you know, become involved and take part in it, in the wealth generation and in the skill generation that's happening from those vineyards that have been developed. So, I would say that's a fair statement.
Thank you. 70% of the best record. Thank you for that. But a question for both of you, and we'll move on. And that is, I think my original thought was, what do the wineries, the collective wineries, the wine in business in British Columbia, what does it owe? I'm not talking about money and sums. I'm talking about what does it owe from a human standpoint to Indigenous nations and the land that they're growing on?
The Indigenous experience doesn't lend itself to the culture of wine. You know, just having access to the land and to be able to have vineyards planted on the land. But, you know, that's land that was deeded to native populations. It wasn't land that they chose. And, you know, it was given to them because it was considered marginal land. So it was considered the shittiest land. So now it's turned out in the world of winemaking, it's the best land. So that's what's owed. I think it's really important. It's just that I feel like I don't know yet how to articulate it. I mean, I have this whole morass of emotions about it, and I'm just not being very articulate about it. And I feel like I need some time to think about it and process.
And I'm sorry to confront you with this. It just was.
No, it's good.
It was just front of mind. Thank you.
Yeah, it's good that you're doing that because the more you do things like that, the more it makes people aware and thinking about it. But, you know, like there's the survivors of this whole, like all the residential school system are in front of us right now. And they're the homeless people, people who are dealing with mental health issues, people who are dealing with, just being disenfranchised. They don't have infrastructure. So really, it's a problem that's in front of us right now. And we're thinking it's a problem from the past, and that's what I think is the difficulty, is how do we as a society wrestle with this and like come to terms with it and start proactively dealing with the issues that are right in front of us right now.
I listened to our conversation of a year ago, June the 6th of one year ago. We talked about Two House and we talked about Gold Hill. And you are the same Val Tate and Ian Sutherland, although I bet you're different by now. And I kept saying, what are you up to? What are you doing? And you talked about Cab Franc, and you talked about possibilities and dreams and making wine for yourself. Mm-hmm. And here we are a year later, and I have a 2018 Chardonnay and a 2017 unbelievable Tempranillo. And I'm still no closer to the Cab Franc, but that's just me moaning and complaining.
Well, all good things will come. Don't you worry.
Did you make enough for the rest of us?
Well, I think not, but we are willing to share. I mean, in terms of production, it was pretty light. The Montrachet we tasted at the Post Hotel Wine Summit, and then the Tempranillo, same venue, different year.
Wow.
It was off the charts delicious, and it came, you know, not only as an enjoyment, but it also came as I wonder if we could do that. You know, if we could make wine that beautiful and long-lived and delicious.
My idea of an Okanagan Chardonnay is that sort of oaky, not heavily oak, just beautiful, embracing, gorgeous texture. This is a completely surprising Chardonnay. I loved it. It took me about 2-3 sips to understand what you were doing. And then I went, I have no idea what she's doing. I have no idea what this is. This is fantastic. That's what you set out to do, obviously. And Montrachet always means to me there's going to be oak in there. But this is very different. Tell me about it.
Well, when we got to the point of actually making it, we making the champagne portion, we tasted the wines and we thought, oh my God, these are delicious. There's no way we're going to just make some bubble out of this. We want to, this is a fantastic sort of nice, acidic, subtle fruit, rich and creamy. It just sort of ticked all the boxes for us. So at that point, we had to do a winemaking 180 and go ahead and bottled it as a straight up Chardonnay.
Val, what's he saying?
Yeah. So what we did is we had it on lees for a couple of years because we wanted to extract some extra flavoring from the lees contact. And we just loved the flavor, and we didn't want to do the secondary ferment. We decided to just bottle it as a still wine.
Yep.
We just found it just had beautiful balance, these really delicate, it's a very delicate wine, but it has a lot of flavor, and it's got this real long finish, and we just loved the fact that it was very delicate, low alcohol, but still has a lot going on, a lot of complexity. And 2 years in barrique on lees contributed to that.
Wow. Hey, Val, what the coolest thing is that you could do it. You could make that decision to just do it.
Yes, because we had nobody to answer to.
Nobody. Unfined, unfiltered, and unadulterated. 100 cases produced. How many are left?
About 90. Well, it was COVID. It was COVID, and we couldn't see anybody. So we had to bide our time, and we needed a housewife.
Oh.
Not everybody can wait a year, in bottle.
Who's in charge of the price points?
Do it together.
Yeah, pretty much.
And the price is?
For the Chardonnay, it's 60. And for the Tempranillo.
Oh, wait a minute. We'll get to the Tempranillo.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's there a 2017 Tempranillo. It's fantastic. But this is an expression that I haven't tasted out of the Okanagan ever. This is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a beautiful block. Vineyard block, but also we had that vintage. The vintage, Ian tasted the fruit in the vineyard, that vintage, and he was like, we got to make this wine this year.
Yeah, that's the beauty of having having the Gill family allow us to just sort of pick and choose whatever volume we want, whatever block we want. And that Tempranillo was stunning. It was also terrifying in that the tannins were so big. I didn't know whether we'd ever be able to rodeo them into some kind of shape. But, 2 years in a brand new French oak barrels, and wow, they came out shining. Silky, huge backbone structure, but Tempranillo fruit, as is so long lived that these are 25 year wines.
It's a single vineyard, which immediately gets my attention. And here's the other thing that gets my attention: 40 cases produced. Am I right so far?
Well, yes. There's 35 left.
And what is the price point? What is the price point of this Tempranillo? The best I have ever tasted.
Go, Valley.
It's $85 a bottle.
Damn you, Val.
Well, it's we're pretty proud of this wine, and we feel like it's punching above its weight. And the thing though is that the Gill brothers, they're fabulous growers, and they landed it that year. That vintage, it was just spectacular, the ripeness. And the one thing, though, that you don't know about this block is that there's a bear that loves that block also. And we had to wrestle that bear for the last of the fruit. So that's the reason why there's only 35 cases, well, 40 cases originally, is because a bear got the it's only 1 acre, and the bear got the rest of that block.
Is that the same bear?
Got 80
that's
cases.
The same bear from Foxtrot, right?
Same bear.
Same
travels
bear.
Around the valley.
Wow. You guys must be so proud of this production. this tiny little, insy little 2018 Chardonnay and a 2017 Tempranillo. But however,
yeah, it's super fun.
However,
it's fun, but you know what? Yes.
However, you did mention a year ago a Blanc de Blanc and a Samsov and a Cab Franc.
Well, we're working our way through the varieties, and this year we're doing the Cab Franc. I mean, we're waiting for the fruit to show itself. So if we feel like it's that vintage, we'll do it. And this year, this past vintage, it was a spectacular vintage for Cabernet Franc. And both of us decided to work on the same block.
Yep.
And I picked the fruit 10 days before Ian did. So we're going to have a very different expression and style of Cab Franc, which we're pretty excited about. But it was the year last year for Cab Franc, but it didn't look like it at the beginning of the season. And we were feeling like, well, we weren't going to be able to work with it last year. And then it just came around, but we picked it late October.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, we did
the dueling Cab Franc of 2000.
Well, that's what you sold us on. And here's the deal, Val. It was my birthday yesterday. I'm very aware that I don't have time for the fruit to show itself.
There you go.
Well,
some of us don't have cellar time. We have to.
I know.
Okay. All right.
Don't worry. Mine's going to be in market sooner than Ian's because it's a lighter, it's a more, I would say, a more feminine and elegant expression of Cab Franc.
Of course, it's feminine.
It's so sexist.
Oh, so it's so feminine. Okay. I'm going to take a break here and gather.
I can also show my feminine Cab Franc side.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, the final segment of this two-parter with Val Tate and Ian Sutherland. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Moon Cursor. They are delighted to announce that their tasting room on Osoyoos East Bench is officially open for daily tastings and sales. They have a COVID-19 safety plan in place to keep the staff and guests safe. They're offering guided wine tastings, private winemaking tour and tasting, and a lot of fun. There's complimentary shipping for orders of 12 bottles or more. And we welcome back Moon Cursor. All the details at the website, mooncursor.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. If you go to the website, the growing flock includes Black Swift Vineyards and Screaming Frenzy. There's a link there. The Scoundrels at Crown and Thieves, there's a link there. If you're heading for The Hatch, see if you can get there for their Hatchy Hour. Their version of a happy hour. 20% off bottles purchased in the picnic area between 2:30 and 5:30. The Hatch is also the home of Black Swift Vineyards, Screaming Frenzy Wines, Crown and Thieves, Truck 59, and Smoke Show Barbecue. But they do ask you to come on down, and they'll do their best to facilitate you and your group and shower you with love, affection, and wine. All the details at thehatchwines.com. And welcome back. This is Tasting Room Radio. She's Val Tate. He is Ian Sutherland. They have two labels we want to talk to you about. Well, one, in the first segment, we talked about Two House, their own personal label that's fantastic. And I urge you, if you're looking for some sort of plonk, go elsewhere. But if you're ready to look for great wine, the 2018 Chardonnay will remind you of Montrachet. You'll feel as though you're there. And the 2017 Tempranillo is the best red single varietal wine I've tasted in years. It's fantastic.
Aww.
There you go. Now,
thank you.
Can we talk about Gold Hill? Because really, the deal is, you know, what took you away from making wines for other people? Like, for example, Bench 1775, Val, was the idea that you could do this project with Ian, and in return, you could work with the acreage that this family has. How many different acres are they growing on?
Well, they have 105 acres, but the production at Gold Hill is very tiny. It's less than 3,000 cases a year. And the focus is predominantly Cabernet Franc and a blended Bordeaux varietal. And, you know, the beauty is that because they have such an extensive vineyard holding, I'm able to just pick and choose whichever. I can pick the eyes of the vineyard. But the red program comes from their home estate vineyard, which I feel is the best vineyard in Canada. And both Ian and I have, and other well-known winemakers in the valley, have been sourcing their fruit from this vineyard, which has year in, year out performed exceptionally well. We love this vineyard. So that's the reason why I'm at Gold Hill, is basically for that vineyard, and in particular for the Cabernet Francois, which is in that vineyard.
Wow.
And that's why I'm there.
Val, give me the name again of the vineyard.
It's the home estate vineyard, but it's called Oxbow Reach.
Okay. And really, I hear excitement in your voice because you know what that vineyard can do.
Oh, yeah. It's spectacular.
Wow.
It is beautiful. It's got the best clones planted there, and they have performed so well. And, you know, even in years where we've had the climate doesn't deliver and it's been quite cool or unseasonably cool, we managed to just get the fruit ripe. And you can taste the climate differences, but the fruit always gets ripe. So it's pretty exciting to work with. And it's now like 20 years old, so it's got some maturity.
Okay. I'm looking at the list of wines that you sent me, the 2020 Cab Franc Rosé. I love the color. The 2020 Sauv Blanc, the 24, yeah. The 20. Oh, we'll get to the reds in a second because reds are crazy. The Cab Franc Rosé, has rosé changed around you, your sense of what rosé is or what we want as wine fans?
Yeah, it's a different program. I mean, historically, because it's been a Cab Franc-focused production, the Cabernet Franc fruit is picked for red wine production, and then there is some of the juice is drained at the time that the fruit is crushed in order to make a Saignée-style rosé, because the focus is primarily on the red wine production. But the Saignée on itself can lend itself to making a beautifully complex rosé because it has more ripeness. There's much more delivered in the juice than there would be if you do a direct press of Cabernet Franc, where you pick it earlier in the season and you get a much more delicate and lean, austere style. So in this style here, it's picked during red wine for red wine production. And how I did it in this style is I stopped the ferment earlier so that there's a little bit of residual sugar. Otherwise, the alcohols would be very high. And, you know, you can taste it in the wines. There's just quite a bit more going on than a typical Okanagan rosé.
I should have asked this in advance, Val. And that is, you're going to affect how, or will you affect how those vines are grown? Because you're the one that has to deal with them at the end of the year in crush.
Yeah.
When we talk about the 2020 Cab Franc Rosé, Will it continue to improve and evolve over the years because of your influence?
Yeah, well, I have been helping them with the viticulture right from the beginning of their first vineyard. So I've been, you know, I've had a very close relationship with the Gill family and have been very involved with their viticulture.
Okay.
But their wine program is going to change. It'll stylistically change. So expect the wines to become...
Yes.
I hate to say feminine in style, but they're going to be feminine in style.
Well, that's
close. I mean, for sure, part of the program will be to focus on the very bold, expressive style, but definitely there'll be more elegance brought into it and a little bit, a little bit more textural effect with oak as opposed to flavor effect.
You're making my heart happy. The Sauv Blanc, what the Sauv Blanc is this year, Will it evolve as well?
Yes, it will. I did a Sauv Blanc because I love Sauvignon Blanc,
sure.
And I don't have any left in my cellar. So they were very happy to let me make Sauv Blanc. We only made 180 cases of it, very small amount. But it's from a vineyard which is very close to their home block called Mirror Lake, and it has an exceptional Sauvignon Blanc block, which I used to make Sauvignon Blanc for Bench 1775. So I'm
same block.
Same block.
Wow.
So I'm very familiar with it. And that wine represents three different picks. So I picked the fruit three different times to get different expression of flavor, made the wines, and then blended them together to make this final Sauvignon Blanc blend. So, yeah, that is actually my house wine right now.
Okay.
That's what I'm drinking all the time.
My house wine is Juju, I think is what it's called. It's a box wine. It's a box rosé. It's wonderful. Listen, here's the deal. For those of you, you've heard me say on this show that there's an interesting thing that happens. that interesting people that we talk to make very interesting wines. And I'm talking to Val Tate and Ian Sutherland from Two House and from the history of the Okanagan. And they're making their own personal wines, and they're, and Val is working with the Gill family at Gold Hill. These wines should be of interest to you just because they're involved. That's all I'm saying. You can make any choice that you want. I'm just trying to give you a heads up here because the Reds, here's the deal with the Reds. Reds are crazy. There's the 2014 Merlot and the 2015 Cab Franc, one at a time. Why are we now drinking a 2014 Merlot? What happened?
Oh, you know, there's actually this was Ian was a very big influence on the Gill family when they first started their winery in 2009. This is a program that Ian got me onto as well, and his philosophy. Well, you should tell what your philosophy is about red winemaking. About the aging program.
No, you're doing great. It sounds much better coming from you.
Well, you know, one of the most important things that Ian has felt, and I have embraced this, and so has the Gill family, that when you make red wine, you really need to make it ready to drink so that when somebody comes in to buy a bottle, they're going to take it home, they're going to enjoy it that night.
Yeah.
And the thing is, with this vineyard, the fruit is so powerful that the wine is actually not drinkable when it's first made. But when you age it, it becomes so much more interesting. First of all, you get into secondary fruit flavors, secondary flavors that happen as the wine develops with time, and also it's ready to drink. Like the tannins have smoothed out, everything is, it's like a lovely you know, silky expression of the wine.
It's the payoff for the wine fan. You realize that you have discovered something, you've come across something that is memorable. That's what it is.
Yeah, like that's the current release. Like imagine that in BC, where like it's so hard to find a wine that's older than 2018. And this is the current release from the
That's crazy. That's crazy.
But, you know, you do it, you hold it back the first year and then it's easy because after that you're just always working through your vintages, but you've already held them back. So that first vintage is hard because you got to go 4 years without selling any red wine.
Exactly. I'm dying to know how many cases of that 2014 Merlot.
Not very much. We have like 200 cases, 230 cases, not very much. And the 2015, we're almost sold out. So we're a little bit ahead in the Cab Franc, so we need to slow it down. So right now it's only available at the tasting room because we are a little bit ahead of ourselves with that vintage.
Is this the same Cab Franc that or the fruit that you were accessing?
Yeah. Exact same block.
I want to go side by side. Side by side.
You got to come down to the winery. We'll do a Poplar Grove bench and Gold Hill, and we'll do the same vintages because it's the same block and just, you know, three different winemakers. And it would be such an interesting experience. But yeah, Ian and I have not have worked with this block of Cab Franc at the home vineyard every year since it was first producing fruit. So that's almost 20 years of uninterrupted vintages.
Because it was Ian that turned me on to Cab Franc. He said, you're missing the boat. Get on. And now, price points for the audience. The 2020 Cab Franc Rosé is how much at Gold Hill?
Rosé is $22.95. The Sauvignon Blanc is $29. Like $30,
right.
And the Merlot is $37, what? And the Cab Franc is $45.
That's fantastic. A 2014 Merlot for $37, did you say?
Yeah, it's an unbelievable price. I mean, they want people to be able to enjoy their wines, and I feel like their pricing is like crazy. The wines are very good, and I think in a way it's a problem because people will see the pricing and they won't believe the wines are as good as they are.
Thank you for doing this. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Oh, pleasure, Terry.
Thank you.
Don't say I didn't give you a heads up, friends. Check out if you find a Two House wine, if it says Two House on it, very distinctive bottle, you might want to consider buying it. Second, or tasting it. Secondly, Gold Hill. Watch that label because when Val gets done with it, it'll be one of the labels we'll talk about for a long time. What she has in her hands is a ton of fruit, a lot of fruit to work with, and she can make it better and better and better each year. Val Tate, Ian Sutherland, thank you for the Okanagan that you have left us and that you're taking into the future. All right, when we come back, we're heading for the Naramata bench to talk to Steve French at Little Engine. This is Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. If you go to the website, the growing flock includes Black Swift Vineyards and Screaming Frenzy. There's a link there. The Scoundrels at Crown and Thieves, there's a link there. If you're heading for The Hatch, see if you can get there for their Hatchy Hour, their version of a happy hour. 20% off bottles purchased in the picnic area between 2:30 and 5:30. The Hatch is also the home of Black Swift Vineyards, Screaming Frenzy Wines, Crown and Thieves, Truck 59, and Smoke Show Barbecue. But they do ask you to come on down, and they'll do their best to facilitate you and your group and shower you with love, affection, and wine. All the details at thehatchwines.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Enrico Winery in the Cowichan Valley. They're very excited about their white wine spring release, Pinot Gris The Shining Armor. Always a crowd favorite, recent winner of a gold medal at the Okanagan Best of Varietal Awards. That new release is going to be one of the hits of the summer. And of course, their crowd favorite, Tempest Ortega. Just a note that the tasting room at Enrico Winery will be open this summer, Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 6 p.m. And you'll be happy to know that music has started on the deck, weather permitting. And a reminder that the whole month of August, they're celebrating the Cowichan Wine Festival. All of the details at EnricoWinery.com. My name is Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. We return once again to the Naramata Bench, which is where this show started in 2007, in a barn on the bench. And we find ourselves with Stephen and Nicole French at Little Engine, the Little Engine that could. Stephen, first of all, welcome to the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Explain, please, to the uninitiated exactly where Little Engine is on that strip.
We're the first winery on the lake side when you're heading towards Naramata, right out of Penticton. So we're, if you're familiar with the bench, there's Township 7 and then there's La Friends, and we are the first one that is on the west side. So right before Red Rooster and right before Ruby Blues.
But congratulations, first of all, because that's a beautiful, beautiful place right there, right that spot right there is beautiful.
It is. We bought two properties, actually. So the first one we bought was in 2013, and it was a beautiful orchard. Prior to that, my wife and I bought a property in 2011. That's where our home is. And then in 2017, I bought the property right beside the winery and just finished amalgamating the two. So now it's one property, and we just finished an expansion on the property, and now we're going ahead and hopefully next September breaking ground on phase three, the final phase, where we're going to build another brand new tasting room.
Wow. So,
been busy.
So, and, yeah. And what's the total acreage now then?
Estate owned is 25, but what I've also done is I've started a viticulture company. The viticulture company was set up to allow me access to further grapes. I'll tell you what, it's so hard to buy property, especially on the Naramata Bench right now. Prices are just skyrocketing. So what I've done is I started a viticulture company, so we maintain people's properties for them, vineyards, and then I usually only work for clients that produce basically Pinot and Chard on the bench, and then I take the production afterwards.
Of course you do. Of course
you
do.
Yeah, because it's tough out there right now. Average price of land out here planted is about quarter of a mil, almost $300,000. So I figured this was another way for me to do it. So all totaled, we're about 65 acres of production now.
And here's the wise part of that. You get to control how those vineyards are handled and how that fruit is grown.
Yeah, and that's so important, especially to the brand that I'm trying to create here. We specialize in ultra ultra low tonnage. I have two viticultural managers. We have our own crew from foreign workers that come in, and we drop an immense amount of fruit. We're sticklers for what we're producing in the vineyard. We're one of the only vineyards wineries around that we actually harvest by clone. We barrel by clone, we ferment by clone, and it gives my winemaker the opportunity to almost become he has a palette, a painter's palette that he
exactly.
then goes and says, okay, I want 777 and I want this and Swan and Wands and all these clones. And by doing that and controlling our harvests, we get the ability to create just intense, beautiful wines.
All right. For those, Stephen French, by the way, on the line, Stephen French and his wife, Nicole, at Little Engine on Naramata Bench. This is one of the questions I ask in certain situations, and that is, how much did you know about this business you're now neck up in? When you were dreaming of doing this and you talked about doing this and you started to sniff around, how was the learning curve for you?
I'd say I knew 5%.
Okay.
It's been unbelievable. My wife and I were passionate collectors before when we were in Calgary. We were there for 23 years, and we did some traveling and had some great wines that we brought back and put into our cellar. When we started this, we took out an orchard, and we knew nothing. I mean, we went off and consulted with really good consultants on what would do really well as far as the property that we had purchased. And then when we did our second, we did the same thing and consulted with people. But we started from basically an orchard. And holy smokes, the hockey stick curve has from marketing to competition to interprovincial trade barriers that you know all about, to not being able to go across the border into the United States, to wine clubs, to presentations, to wine critics. It has been crazy, Terry, crazy.
Wine critics. Don't get me going on wine critics. Okay, here's the deal. Here's the deal. This heat dome that we've just gone through, or as actually appears to be moving on a bit, how did the vines, how did the young vines handle it, and how did the veteran vines handle it?
You know, everybody's got a different theory on when they shut down. We believe they shut down about 37 degrees Celsius. Most of my vineyards, we've only got, we maintain 9 people's vineyards right now, and I own 3 myself. The younger vines are not happy. There is an immense amount of water that has to be poured into them, but fortunately for us, most of our vineyards are established, but again, the vines do shut down. Photosynthesis stops in the high 30s, so we're ready for this to move on. Today's supposed to be 44 degrees Celsius.
Mm. Well, it's always hot there, but not consistently hot like that. That's crazy. That's just a heat blanket, and I hope everybody... can survive this. You placed in front of me three of the great small bottle tastings that I've had in quite some time. The last time it happened on that scale was when Okanagan Crush Pad opened up, and the little bottles were actually test tubes, but it was cool. I loved it. It got my attention.
Yep.
I love the idea of the virtual tasting. Before we get to the wines itself, you're on screen, walking us through this wonderful, you've got good camera work and lighting and everything, and you're telling us about the notes and everything. How have people bought into this in this day and age of virtual everything?
Yeah, so we came up with this idea basically right at the start of COVID. March, I guess it was, I looked at my winemaker and I said, you know, we may not see anybody.
Yeah.
And we need to come up with something where people are going to say, okay, I can't go to the winery, but maybe the winery can come to me. And so I was looking at all of these wineries down in the United States, in Napa and Sonoma. Fantastic wineries. And they're industry leaders as far as marketing. They have teams of marketers, Ivy League education. So You know, I'm not, I'm an adopter, and what I do is I say to myself, okay, well, I don't think that wheel is really running that smoothly, so maybe I'll try and take a few bumps out of it. And one of the things I didn't like about the tastings that they were doing was they would send you a full 750-ml bottle.
Sure.
Well, what if you don't like the bottle? And then you've got, you know, you try a glass, and you're saying, well, you know, there's still a lot of wine here. So why not create something smaller? So my winemaker and I went out and we said, okay, well, what's the smallest we can source? And it was these little 200-ml bottles, and it's actually called a Piccola bottle. So each one of these bottles we have to do by hand. So we actually have to crack a bottle to put it in. So there, it's not meant for a bottle that's going to be stored. But we designed some really slick packaging, and we said to ourselves, okay, if we market this correctly, then what we can do is we can have people watch a video in the comfort of their home, wherever they are, and they can actually do a Zoom call with a few people. And they can go online, they can watch a video with my winemaker who will take them through a Merlot, a Chardonnay, or a Pinot Noir. They can pause it, they can bring in some food, they can call us and say, well, okay, well, it's Chardonnay, what kind of cheese should I have? And so we'll tell them, and then they just sit down and they enjoy a tasting at their own leisure. There's a lot of people that are intimidated by going to wineries where, you know, maybe they feel that, wait a minute, I don't smell the creme brulee and I don't smell the vanilla. Well, now you're in the comfort of your own home and you don't have to be being told by anyone, do you taste the cherry or the dark cherry or the strawberry? Instead, there's no pressure, and it's been really well accepted. Especially, we try and push these through the fall, into the spring, and into the winter months, because in the Naramata Bench, Terry, and you know this better than anybody, you could play road hockey on Naramata Road because nobody's here.
That's right.
It's ridiculous, right? I mean, the Coca-Cola, I wouldn't want to come from Vancouver either.
No.
The roads are treacherous, and then you don't want to come from Rogers Pass. You don't want to come from Alberta. So we're really quiet. So what we do is we take the tasting to people now.
Yeah, and what's really cool?
It's been really well received.
And what's really cool, Stephen, is you guys had a net presence. You had a wine club presence. You built that. You were ready to go from the get-go. For some of the wineries, it took them almost a year to get up to speed. So you guys were ready
to
go. This is perfect for you, yes?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
Yep. It's done nothing, but our wine club is one of the strongest in Canada. And we're a small winery, 7,200 cases produced annually right now, and more than half of that goes to my members.
You're going to be 10,000 by the time. Will you stop at 10,000?
Yeah, I absolutely don't want to get any bigger than 10,000.
Okay.
We didn't build this winery to sell it. We didn't build this winery to... I mean, we've got two young sons who are 19 and 21 years old.
Aha.
Maybe one of them will be interested. I didn't build it to pass on either. I'll work this thing until I'm in the ground. I enjoy it. I love it. My wife and I are involved in every facet of this business. But 10,000, from what I've heard from other industry peers,
is
that magic number.
That's right.
And if I go over that, then I have to start wearing a suit again, and I don't want to do that.
Exactly. Something happens at 10,000 to production. In other words, the
yep.
production goes down. The quality goes down in order to keep production going. So that's that magic marker
exactly.
that keep in your mind. Is it now? Here's one question before we, because this is a two-parter. One question to end this part, and that is, what you thought winemaking, owning a winery, and being a wine owner was going to be like, and what it's like? Were they different?
Yep. Absolutely. You fall in love with, I'm not unlike anybody else. You walk into an absolutely pristine and beautiful winery, you know, down, there's many now in the Okanagan, or whether or not you're in Napa or Sonoma, and you fall in love with the landscape and the terroir and the views and the actual tasting room. And I'll tell you what, the most magical point for me, though, is not, you know, the tasting room and the hustle and bustle and everything else. It's in October during harvest.
Exactly.
And when I'm out there with my winemaker and you smell you smell the crush and you smell what's going on the crush pad, and you look out and it's, and the sun's beginning to set and you're doing punch downs, and that's where the magic is for me. I never thought, yeah, I'm a business guy. I love the fact of building this business and putting bottles on people's Christmas dinner tables or Thanksgiving dinner and being part of memories. But for me, it's the fact of being part of Harvest and being part of Crush, and that's the magic time for me.
Okay. That's just the first half of this conversation, because in just a moment, we are going to go full piccolo, my friends, with Stephen French from Little Engine Wines on the Naramata bench. Hold on, because we're going to go through the gold Chardonnay, the gold Pinot Noir, and the gold Merlot. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Enrico Winery in the Cowichan Valley. They're very excited about their white wine spring release, Pinot Gris, The Shining Armor. Always a crowd favorite, recent winner of a gold medal at the Okanagan Best of Varietal Awards. That new release is going to be one of the hits of the summer. And of course, their crowd favorite, Tempest Ortega. Just a note that the tasting room at Enrico Winery will be open this summer, Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 6 p.m. And you'll be happy to know that music has started on the deck, weather permitting. And a reminder that the whole month of August, they're celebrating the Cowichan Wine Festival. All of the details at EnricoWinery.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery and Bistro on the Naramata Bench. Just a heads up, their tasting room and bistro are booking up quickly this summer. They are encouraging you to plan ahead and book your Hillside visit well in advance. Just a reminder, the tasting room hours are Wednesday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Wine sales are available daily from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. as well. And the bistro hours, indoor and outdoor dinner service, Wednesday to Sunday, 5 to 8:30 p.m. Reservations are required. And you also have takeout and meal kit options, Wednesday to Sunday, 1 to 8:30 p.m. All the details at hillsidewinery.ca. Welcome back. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. We are spending two segments at Little Engine on the Naramata Bench. And we have the co-owner, Stephen French. His wife, Nicole, is running the empire while we chat on the phone. Were you on a tractor or a front-end loader yesterday when I called you?
I was actually on a forklift.
Forklift. There you go. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, these Piccolo small bottles that came my way for the virtual tasting. I love the idea. We'll give you, by the way, we will give you the address on our website and here, littleenginewines.com/cellar-club. See, that's why I do it at the end. And you also warned me that the wines will not, they don't hang around. These are small bottles. They've been transferred. Drink them as soon as you feel comfortable to do so, which we did. And we started with the Chardonnay, as we should as well, the 2018 Gold Chardonnay, given some 96 points. If you go to the website, you can see this. You said you were wine fans, you and Nicole.
Yep.
Did you drink Montrachet?
I have. I'm a little more inclined to for some of the, what I started with was some of the Sonoma shards,
right.
But I've tried it.
And how would you liken your Chardonnay? Because it is an absolute mouthful.
We actually have four different Chardonnays, believe it or not. And the way we tier our wines, so we've got our silver Chardonnay, we've got our gold Chardonnay, and we've got our platinum Chardonnay. We don't always create platinum wines. The stars have to align. But then what we did was we also created a fourth Chardonnay, and it's kind of a Chablis style. So it sees no oak. It's done in stainless steel. And it's just juicy. It just doesn't have that the presence of oak. My wife is a huge Chardonnay fan, and so we went in a traditional style. The silver sees about 25% new oak for only about 6 months. But the gold tier of wine is created with estate fruit. So it's fruits that are grown on properties that we maintain only and that we own. And the Chardonnays see about 16 months sometimes as high as 50% new French oak, whether or not that's in a regular 225-liter barrel, or sometimes we use puncheons, the 500-liter barrels. But
for the most part, that's 48% new wood. So it's going to have all of those properties, that wonderful mouthfeel, a beautiful long finish. You mentioned in your virtual tasting creme brulee. I'm with you on that. A little bit of honey. I like the idea of cellar time for this Chardonnay. That would be fantastic. And the lees stirring. People, when the casual wine fan hear lees stirring, they're going, well, what are you talking about? Just briefly describe that visually so people understand what you're doing, because it's a beautiful process.
Yeah, so Scott, our winemaker, is physically climbing, because we've got barrels stacked sometimes four high up on top of these barrels, and we'll open the bung, and in goes, it's kind of a, looks like a stainless steel hockey stick, and gets on the bottom, and it's just an agitation. So what he does is he stirs that around, and all of the lees raise up to the surface, and what it does is... over time, these lees settle down, and it really just creates texture and a component, that mouthfeel and all those things that you so eloquently put. It's tedious, it's monotonous, it's, especially when you're doing. We have 350 barrels. Huh. In our cellar right now. Obviously, we're doing these with our Chardonnays, so that constitutes about 40% of our production. So he's on top of 100 barrels doing this. And we do it sometimes every week, and then at a point it'll get down to once a month, but it's just it's perfect for palate texture.
Stephen, two things. One, I did a thing on winter whites last year. I'm fascinated by winter whites because it represents the fact that you can find whites to take you through the food, the stews and the soups and the heavier meals that we have over the course of the winter. And basically the one thing that they had in common, the winter whites, was mouthfeel, like the Ava from Le Vieux Pin. This has incredible mouthfeel. I love that about it. But also it brings into mind the fact that we've come full circle. As you mentioned in your virtual tasting, there was a time when oak was completely rejected from Chardonnay, the Australian model. And when we went full Chenin, whatever, full Chablis, now have we come full circle, or is it now just a personal preference?
I think it's personal preference. I agree with you 100%. It was so overdone. The oak was so overdone, so overpowering. But now what happens, and I think especially with our Chardonnays, we really try and let the fruit show through, but we try and create wines of complexity. And so what we do is we drop a lot of tonnage in the vineyard. So these Chardonnays are produced at about 3.5 tons per acre. And you know that on the Naramata Bench, Chardonnay can be produced at 7 to 10 tons per acre. Sure. So what we're getting are Chardonnays that are stringent, they're powerful. And when you have powerful fruit, even though you introduce oak to it, it's not that they combat, but they blend, they work well together. And I think that that's one of the beautiful things about a Chardonnay, is you can introduce the component of oak to it, and it can be beautiful if it's integrated correctly and it's balanced.
It can't be cloying. You can't overdo it. You have to know when to shut it down. The price point on this gold Chardonnay?
The golds, so... $55?
It's 57, sir. I'll have to correct you on that, sir.
57, that's right. Okay. 57 is our gold chart.
Okay. Yep. I just have to believe your website. And how many cases?
Yep. Of our gold Chardonnay, we do about 600 cases annually.
A lot. But it also tells the wine fan out there how hard they're going to have to chase. That's all. I just want to let you know.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. My platinum Chardonnay, we produce about 125.
Right.
And then the silver Chardonnay, it's about 800 cases.
Okay. Little Engine Wines, Naramata Bench, Stephen and Nicole French. I'm talking to Stephen. And we're going to move on to the, and remind you that the virtual tasting can be found as well. Join the club. The 2018 Pinot. I was checking out your, that's the first thing I stopped, your virtual playback, because what you can do, you can stop and make notes. Right. Your clone, 667, 777, 115, and then Mount something. I missed that.
Mount Eden.
Eden, okay.
Yes, yeah, Heritage Clone.
All right.
Every year, it's not that it changes. We like to have consistency as far as clones are concerned. But we're one of the only wineries in Canada that I know of that has this many clones, 13 clones of Pinot Noir. yeah, it's crazy. I was down in Oregon, and there's a winery down there owned by a guy named Dr. Ravana. And I believe the name of the winery is Alexandra, and he has 15 clones, so I've got to get three more so
there
I can
go.
Beat him. But the whole premise of providing our winemaker with this amount of clones is Scott wants to have a whole bunch of colors on his painter's tray.
Sure.
So that when we create these wines, he can use certain clones, and that's what we do with our silver, our gold, our platinum, and we actually do a one that's called a family clone select. It's okay. just made up of heritage clones.
Stephen, a couple of quick questions here. One is, are they harvested and cellared separately and then blended? Is there some field blending going on? What's the process?
Great question. No field blending. We harvest each one independent, each clone independent, ferment each one independent, and then barrel each one independent. So Scott knows exactly what's in each okay. barrel. And then it's a fun time come November and December when the crowds have dissipated and in our tasting room kind of becomes a little bit of a lab.
Yeah.
Scott's got little beakers and,
yeah.
and he's doing blending trials.
That's fantastic. And it proves once again my point. It's the art of blending. It is an art form. And you have to be really good to be really good. You have to have done your homework and lived a life. That's it. By the way, everybody, as you know, everybody has a different version of what Pinot is. And if you've gone to, Stephen, the Pinot celebration, you'll know that there were 35 or 36 different Pinots being poured. Every one of them was different from the other. And
absolutely.
So yours is big and bold and dark. There's nothing light about this. Ripe fruit, wonderful finesse to it, oak and spice. Anise on the nose and on the palate, new oak, lots of tannins. It's a bigger version of Pinot for those seeking that.
Yep. Yeah, we like to, when Scott and I got together, Scott's our winemaker in 2014, Scott did his master's down in Australia, a Canadian boy, came home, worked I think about 12 vintages before we got them in 2014, but I said, I want to create terroir-driven wines. I want to create the best we absolutely can, but I want to create wines of complexity and boldness. And so we find that actually as you start in our silver tier of wines, it's a very terroir-driven wine. It's beautiful, but the gold, the one that you've tasted, is very pronounced. Lots of dark fruit. We'll do a cold soak for about a week on this one, just trying to extract as many colors as we possibly can and those aromas and everything else. And then we just get into plunging and lots of punch downs. And we'll do that for maceration times almost at least 3 weeks. And then we drain them off and put them into press, and then we go into barrel.
We're talking Little Engine Wines on Naramata Bench with Stephen French. And so we need a couple of the important things. Listen, because I'm basically saying I'm a huge fan of this Pinot. Simple as that. I could go far more complex, but we're going to burn time here. What's the price?
Yep.
What's the price point on that 2018 Pinot?
$67 a bottle. We produce about 650 cases on an annual basis.
Okay.
And it is one of our. It doesn't stay on the shelf. You would never see this bottle on a retail shelf. It is. You might see it in a few restaurants. The restaurants like to carry our silver, but these wines are sold out of our tasting room. They're sold online, and they're for our members.
Okay. 2018 Gold Merlot, 100% French, 16 months, 56% new oak pungence, actually ripe fruit, black cherries, dark fruit, wonderful ripe plum. That's the exact center of what Merlot can be. And you obviously love your Merlot.
It's probably my favorite wine. Yeah, I mean, our Chardonnay is incredible. My wife loves our Chardonnay. Our Pinot has a cult following. But I think if Merlot is done correctly, and this Merlot comes from only my properties, right on the Naramata Bench. We've got 3 acres. I think it just can be outstanding.
Clones, that's what I was writing down, 181 and 343.
Right.
Right, okay. Couldn't figure that one out because I circled it twice. I know that you did the whole berries. It's just you took care of the fruit, and it shows in the bottle. And and I did a Merlot special last year, talking to some of the other Merlot producers in the Okanagan as to why it was getting shortchanged, why it was sort of being pushed aside or taken out for other hotter new vibe wines. When Merlot is the actual workhorse of the Okanagan, and we do it well.
We do, but it's because it's been that blending grape, right?
Yeah.
And everybody's going into these Bordeaux blends right now. We have a Bordeaux blend. It's called our Union. I love it. But we don't throw anything else in this one. There's no Cab. There's no Malbec. There's not a Franc in there, nothing. This is 100% pure Merlot, and it's a pure expression. Someone told me once that Merlot, I always considered it a very bold grape, but it's a feminine grape. But if done correctly, it's just texture, it's smooth. We've actually put our Merlots up against blind tasting, up against some of the best ones, and we've won them. And I think if you do it right with a long, cool ferment, which is the way that we do it. You soak it on skin, and you just extract as much color as you can. And again, super low tonnages. Like this is produced at 3 tons or less. And again, you know that on the bench, Merlot is usually produced upwards of 5 to 7 tons per acre.
Sure.
We produce ours at 3. So we're going to get as much out of this grape. It's going to be extracted. It's going to be bold. And it is. It's one of my favorites.
What's the price point?
57. Yeah, and again, it's one of those ones that just sells out quickly.
How many cases?
Of our Gold Merlot, about 500 cases. Our Platinum Merlot, when we produce it, this is our first year going to 2019 that we're actually going to produce a Platinum Merlot, and we'll have about 85 cases produced of the Platinum. And then we do a Silver tier, and we only do about 300 cases of that.
Okay, here's the part.
So it's not a lot.
Here's the part you like. You're open for appointments 11 to 6, is that correct?
That's right.
Your website?
LittleEngineWines.com.
And how do we get inducted into the club, the cellar club?
So if you're on our website, you just simply go to our cellar club and try and create everything pretty simple. It's just 2 clicks, and basically you're a member. It's 2 shipments twice a year, but the great thing about our membership is you get to choose whatever you want. So if you are a Merlot fan and you just want to take 6 or 12 bottles of our Merlot twice a year, that's your shipment.
Sure.
So we let everybody choose. It's hairy when we're packing because we ship out in the spring and we ship out in the fall in October. But we want people to choose their wines. We don't. I've been a member of so many wine clubs. When you get, it's the dog days of summer, and you're getting a big red, or it's the middle of winter, and you're getting rosé. And I don't want to do that to customers.
Not that there's anything wrong with rosé in the middle of winter.
No, I love rosé. We've got a rosé of, we produce about 500 cases of it, but we usually sell it out within 2 months.
Okay. Thank you for doing this, of course, and get through this heat dome, and let's see what effect it has on the 2021 wines that we'll see next year. It'll be very interesting to see.
It's going to be a great vintage.
It will be a
Fingers
great vintage.
Fingers crossed, absolutely.
All right.
Yeah, thank you very much for this, Terry.
Thank you, Stephen, and hello to Nicole, and hello to the Naramata Bench. He is Stephen French, and he is the co-owner, co-proprietor, co-founder, along with his wife, Nicole, of Little Engine Wines on the Naramata Bench. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery and Bistro on the Naramata Bench. Just a heads up, their tasting room and bistro are booking up quickly this summer. They are encouraging you to plan ahead and book your hillside visit well in advance. Just a reminder, the tasting room hours are Wednesday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Wine sales are available daily from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. as well. And the bistro hours, indoor and outdoor dinner service, Wednesday to Sunday, 5 to 8:30 p.m. Reservations are required. And you also have takeout and meal kit options, Wednesday to Sunday, 1 to 8:30 p.m. All the details at hillsidewinery.ca.